her new book, The Age of Dignity, Preparing for the Elder Boom in a Changing America. At 9:30, Don Merrill interviews Martin Ford. At 10, Air Cascadia is off. Instead, we'll hear a full hour of Flashpoints Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on the Radio Zine, Kathleen Stevenson talks with Charles Fishman, author of The Big Thirst, The Secret Life and Turbulent Future of Water, about how water has shaped our past and how new water challenges are shaping the future. At 11:30, we hear an episode of The Scholar Circle with host Maria Armudian. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thank you KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Good night, Robert.
Good night, Sarika.
Good night, Matthew.
Good night.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Portland's open reservoirs were the topic of a hearing today at the City Council meeting, but many people who wanted to attend the hearing were shut out as the City Council decided to close the balcony and strictly enforce rules on proper decorum in City Council after disruptions at last week's hearing on the reservoirs. Portland's unique reservoir system, according to the local group Friends of Reservoirs, exemplify a wise use resource plan, blending utility with natural preservation and public recreation. Built during the Progressive Era, the group says they were designed within the ethics of the City Beautiful movement, which brought about a period of American development that purposefully made public works beautiful as a means to raise living standards. In 2006, the Environmental Protection Agency put in place rules known as LT2, which require that all of the nation's municipal water systems either cover their open reservoirs or provide treatment at the outlets of the reservoirs to remove or inactivate 99% of the Cryptosporidium protozoa. However, crypto has never been detected in Portland's water system, and the pristine Bull Run watershed is not considered at risk of contamination. Following a federal court's rejection of its legal challenge to the final LT2 rule, Portland developed a schedule for replacing its open reservoir system with enclosed storage by 2020. Today's hearing involved an appeal of the Portland Water Bureau and Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association against the Historic Landmarks Commission's decision to approve with conditions the proposal to disconnect and empty the Mount Tabor reservoirs. Here's some of the testimony from today's hearing, beginning with Landmark Commissioner Harris Ben Robso.
And I'm sorry to say that. We initially split, I believe, at our second meeting as to what to do. We split 3-3, and at that time, I asked the parties, we called them up, as we spoke to them, I asked them each if they would be willing to submit to some kind of mediation, some kind of dispute resolution, non-binding, just to talk. And the Neighborhood Association and others agreed the Water Bureau would not make that kind of a commitment. And this, again, was non-binding. And that, to me, really caused me to think in a much different way about what was before us. And I think, frankly, again today, when we're, for the first time, this commission is hearing about, as Brian was talking about, costs and timelines to drain reservoirs, the removal of pumps, which would obviously make the vessel one that couldn't be used as a reservoir. I mean, none of that stuff was brought up, and certainly there was a time and occasion to do that, and frankly, it's very disheartening, disconcerting. It really wastes all of our time as commission members. And I don't want to ascribe any bad intent to anybody, but I have seen here something that I probably would never wish to be involved in again as a commission member. And I frankly, if I ever had any aspiration to be a city council member, I would, those hearings would have completely eliminated that. It was really that horrible of an experience, and frankly a sad one, because this was not a dispute between neighbors, but a city agency and the people it serves.
Hey folks, please, let's not, no applause, thumbs up are fine, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Again, for the record, Ty Wyman here as attorney, and I wanted to pick up on a procedural question, at least it's still a question to me. Commissioner Fritz was gracious enough to suggest to us a way in which we could perhaps suggest conditions as a way of avoiding a full-blown conditional use process and that we might be able to submit later in writing. I saw something today, a slip that mentioned a record open period of June 11th, but I didn't know if that was official.
We have that option, and we might exercise it to keep the record open. And if you want to request that, we can take that request.
Okay. Well, I would have to talk. I'll talk to my client here after we stand down. So at this point, it's still open. Whether the record will be left open,
that's correct.
Still unclear.
We have that option, and particularly if a party requests it, we usually grant it.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I know that I understand that my colleagues here have, frankly, they want to rebut some of the evidentiary assertions that you have heard here today, and I'm going to hand it over to Stephanie to start that.
Well, much of the new evidence that you've seen today, we haven't seen, so this is us trying to catch up on the fly, and so we'll do our best. So first, with the assertion Water Bureau made that the 60-day time limit is mathematically impossible, that is completely new information for us. And why, at the Historic Landmarks Commission hearing, the commissioners did ask multiple times, what would that process look like and what would it cost? And that data was never once asserted. We also, in other formats, have heard them actually explain that the drain, clean, fill process takes less than a week without overtime pay, and that it would need to happen 3 times a year, and they've even given us a cost for that. And in fact, in April of 2014, there was an Oregonian article where they were quoted, a Water Bureau staff person was quoted, that they were in the process of draining and cleaning, and then they would refill, and that would take 4 to 6 days.
Stuart, let me follow up on that for a second.
Yes.
Do you believe there's a difference between draining into the sewer system and draining through other pipes, and does that affect the timeline? In other words, one of the things I think they said was it depends on
the different set of pipes.
On what set of pipes?
Yeah.
If it's disconnected from the system, it goes in the sewer system, which has permits because of CSO. Are we talking apples and oranges here?
We may be, but we haven't had a chance to investigate that. And I think we'd like that chance to look at what the difference is between what they've said in the past and what they're saying today. Because what we've got in the record from the past is an understanding, and so did the Historic Landmarks Commission, that what they were trying to protect were those deep iconic views and having them be there regularly when visitors came to the park. So they were under the impression that Water Bureau needed a total of 3 weeks to do the drain, clean, fill, and they doubled that. They very generously doubled that. So this new idea that it might take 77 days to drain really changes the whole concept of how do you not trigger the no adverse effect warning from SHPO if you're taking 77 days to drain the water. I think that needs to be looked at.
My name's Catherine Kirkpatrick. I'm an allied health worker and a mother, and I am here to ask you to reject the application. Commissioner Fish asked us to discuss the actual merits of the dispute between the Water Bureau and the public, and I agree. That dispute is over whether there is actually any merit in even taking these reservoirs offline. Applicant has not met its burden and cannot meet its burden of proving under Section G1 that the historic character and avoidance of removal criteria are met because the reservoir's in-use status as the utilities that provide us with potable water was the defining trait and character specifically mentioned in their register nomination and listing. Furthermore, I think the HLC erred in saying, look, we don't have the authority to look at the applicant's contention that this is federally mandated. The applicant raised that issue and has the burden of proving it. I submit they cannot meet that burden because they haven't even met the basic federal public notification guidelines on notifying the public of the effect of this decommissioning on our radon exposure. And this is my child's life at stake. So I called a couple of national experts in nuclear chemistry and radioactive public health, and I read the peer-reviewed journals that they sent me, and I've submitted them under separate cover. And what they told me was very alarming. And further, I've looked at the Water Bureau's evidence that they submitted about how this is mandated, and I see that the EPA clearly told the Oregon Health Authority that it can allow a deferral. And so I am asking you to please use your power to not only deny this application, but scrap your self-imposed rush deadline so that we can do this in a way that really protects my child and the rest of the public. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
I'm just here to implore you to go to your hearts, to go to your conscience, to go to that place where maybe you will go in your quiet times. I hope you have some quiet times, because this is really a bigger issue than Mount Tabor Park or Washington Park. It's a global issue, and it's a global issue about power. And when you wonder why sometimes people speak disrespectfully, why they yell, why you don't get your peace like you would have it in these chambers, it's because that's sometimes what people do when there's misuse of power and they feel disempowered. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Camille Day. I'm a software engineer at Intel. I'm a resident of Portland, and I consider myself a citizen of Cascadia. Time after time, this council under Mayor Hale's leadership has acted as if Portland was your personal playground, pushing an agenda that the residents of Portland have opposed vocally and consistently. Backroom deals, closed balconies, and rushed decisions are not the symptoms of a healthy democracy. So here we are again, your supposed bullies, as I have read in the papers, ruining all your playground fun. The people are speaking. As an elected representative, you need to learn to listen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Some people, like local activist Pam Ali, were shut out of the city council hearing because of a newly imposed rule that the balcony would be closed for this hearing.
We were told that city council was full and that we had to go over to the Portland building, where we went to a little, there were very few of us there, by the way, I mean, who were turned away when I was there. Certainly not the 80 people that it would take to fill the balcony. When we were at the Portland building in their little auditorium on the second floor, where we were supposed to watch a live stream, which kind of sort of happened, we learned that the balcony had been closed. And that made me mad. So when I was coming out, I talked to some other people who were coming over from City Council, City Hall, and they had tried to get in and were refused, and the police were called, and so they left. I guess they didn't want to get arrested for just wanting to attend council in person. I then called Mayor Hale's office, and first the person who answered the phone told me that, well, the balcony is always closed, which I know is not true, because I've attended a lot of city council meetings and the balcony isn't closed. You just go up there and there's standing room only, even in the council chambers. I wasn't intending to testify today. I just wanted to be there and see what was going on. Then I called the other city council offices. One, I think it was Nick Fish's office, referred me to a man named Robert Keita, who is in facilities maintenance, and apparently that means the security. And his phone was only taking voicemail at all. I would still like to know who authorized this. One set, I think it was Fish's office, told me that it was apparently a mutual decision by the entire council and security, that there was a security problem. But I don't see what it was, unless they wanted to just do a collective punishment on all of us.
Journalist Victoria Collier of Truthout did an investigative piece this January about what she called the corporate takeover of Portland's open reservoirs. The city of Portland is racing to move forward with its development project, even while under fire for uncomfortable allegations. Federal charges against the firm CH2M Hill, which is slated to hold the contract to cover the reservoirs, include mismanagement, kickbacks, conflicts of interest, violations of the Clean Water Act, reprisals against whistleblowers, criminal fraudulence, and longstanding engineering lapses. Most troubling, according to Victoria Collier's research, are charges of decades of revolving door cronyism involving Joe Glicker, a vice president of CH2M Hill. The company awarded the contracts. Not only was Glicker a former chief engineer of the Portland Water Bureau, he also worked as a core consultant with the Environmental Protection Agency to write the very LT2 rules that now require these massive so-called emergency water infrastructure projects. Today's hearing is just the latest in a series of challenges and appeals of the city's decision to go ahead with the covering of the reservoirs and the draining of the five Mount Tabor reservoirs. For KBOO News, I'm Jenka Soderberg.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM or online at kboo.fm. The time is 6 p.m. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio. Join us for the KBOO Community Radio Monthly Film Night at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, we'll be showing the film Death Metal Angola on Thursday, June 11th at 7 p.m. This documentary traces how death metal has taken root in the Southwest African country of Angola, with its history of war and civil unrest. Creating something new is an act of defiance in the face of destruction.